Welcome to The Honest Report, a weekly podcast analyzing media coverage of the Arab-Israeli conflict, anti-Semitism, and radical Islamic terrorism.
Violence escalating between Israel and the Palestinians, hundreds of rockets fired from Gaza toward Israel, people running for cover.
We start the show with the breaking news that has been coming in. Israeli police are saying that at least seven people have been injured in a car ramming and stabbing attack in Tel Aviv.
Hundreds of rockets fired from Gaza towards Israel. People running for cover on this Tel Aviv beach as air defense systems blew rockets out the sky.
Here's your host, Rob Walker.
Amongst Israel's enemies, there are many fronts in war. In addition to the physical threats marshaled against the Jewish state, such as terrorism, there are other attempts to delegitimize and demonize the country in the eyes of the world, including the BDS movement. But there is yet another front, often unknown to the general public, cyber warfare, where state and non-state actors, such as terrorists, attempt to cause harm to Israel via cyber attacks against important targets. And while these threats are very real to Israel, the country has become a pioneer in addressing them. That's according to Chuck Freilich, Israel's former Deputy National Security Advisor, who is also co-author of the book Israel and the Cyber Threat, How the Startup Nation Became a Global Cyber Power. Freilich joins us on this week's podcast and provides a deep dive into the reality of cyber warfare beyond the headlines, how Israel has responded so far, and the storm clouds on the horizon. Welcome to the Honest Report podcast. Chuck Freilich, welcome to the Honest Report podcast.
Thank you. It's good to be with you.
It's our pleasure having you here. You recently co-authored a book just released this past July called Israel and the Cyber Threat, How the Startup Nation Became a Global Cyber Power. Tell us, what exactly does it mean to be a global cyber power?
Well, there's actually an incredible story here, how a country which is the size of New York City in its population is considered to be one of the top cyber powers in the world, both in the civil or the commercial area and in the military area. Israel is placed way up there in all of the international surveys in the field.
And so define for us exactly what it means when we talk about cyber security, cyber power. What does that mean exactly? And how is it distinct from the broader sort of high-tech or technological sphere?
Well, cyber is a subset of the high-tech world. It's a part of it. But it's an area where Israel excels, particularly Israel actually excels in the entire high-tech realm. It was considered number two in the world after the United States until a year or two ago, and I believe that China pushed us into third place. And I personally can tolerate that because I think the Chinese are slightly bigger than we are. But in the cyber area, Israel was one of the first countries to awaken both to the threats and the opportunities posed by the cyber realm. Starting in the 90s and in the early 2000s, Israel realized the change that was taking place, and it started building its capabilities. It was, again, one of the first countries to develop a national cyber strategy for the civil realm, and is also considered very advanced in the military realm. It's been a tremendous story here.
So help us understand a little bit in terms of what those threats look like, right? Israel faces, of course, you can pop on your website and a little blurb about the book and how it discusses the, you know, Hamas and Hezbollah and the Islamic Republic of Iran, where they're constantly launching these cyber attacks on Israel. What exactly does a cyber attack mean? Sort of from a layman's term, does it mean trying to hack into the IDF? Does that mean trying to hack into civilian operations like hospitals? What does it look like exactly?
Well, first of all, let me just add something about your previous question that I didn't answer. We are basically, all of us are part of the cyber realm today. We're talking now over a computer system that puts the two of us as part of the realm. Anyone who's using a computer is part of the cyber realm in essence, and we all get to enjoy the benefits of this incredible revolution that's taken place in recent decades, and we're all open to the threats. Now, I personally had my website attacked a couple of times. When we talk about cyber attacks and cyber weapons, and people even had some hyperbole and they talk about cyber bombs, it's important to remember that we're talking simply digital code. Somebody is using their computer system, they're using digital code to cause harm to someone else. And there are three primary areas in which cyber attacks are conducted. One is for purposes of disruption or destruction of somebody else's computer system, maybe to take down a website, to deface it. A second area, or to cause actual physical destruction of the other computer system. A second area is cyber espionage. And here the cyber realm has absolutely revolutionized things. What you can do today with cyber espionage makes everything known in the past pale in comparison. And that is true also of the third area, which is cyber information operations. And think of it this way. One person sitting with a computer somewhere in the world, if they're good at it, can get the message out to untold numbers of people all around the world instantaneously, directly, and at virtually no cost.
So when these hostile parties to Israel launch these cyber attacks, what is their end result? Is it to keep Israel busy? Is it to sort of focus Israel's energies onto something where they may not have a realistic prospect of success, but that was never the goal? Or is it really to shut down Israel's military and civilian capabilities?
Well, the good news is that there hasn't been any one really, really destructive attack against Israel, at least that we know of. There have been a lot of attacks that have caused limited trouble. There have been, those are not talking now about the disruptive and destructive ones. I mean, lots of government and private firm websites have been disrupted, brought down for a while, but nothing critical so far. There have been a couple of important intelligence attacks that we know about where they managed to gain important information, in some cases entirely indirectly. I'll give you an example. There's an insurance company that caters to the defense establishment. Okay, they offer preferential terms, and so a lot of people in the different defense agencies are insured by this firm. I was for a number of years. And they attacked the firm. It turned out, it's probably an Iranian attack. It turns out that their cybersecurity, shall we say, left something to be desired. And they managed to get and to then dump on the internet the names of thousands of people, which agency they worked for, whether it was IDF or Mossad or Shin Bet or whatever, a great deal of personal information, where they lived, their phone numbers, their email addresses, a lot of their health files, license plate numbers, all sorts of things that if you're a foreign intelligence agency, you'd really like to know. And the third area has been the information operations, which are growing rapidly against Israel in the last couple of years. And there's fear that they could cause significant disruption to national debate, which is bad enough as it is in Israel today for reasons of our own creation, the whole judicial overhaul crisis and the polarization of recent years. But the Iranians and Hezbollah and Hamas are all obviously trying to help us make it even worse. Again, so far, there hasn't been a success like there was the Russian attack on the American elections in 2016 and 2020. But they're trying. So we face the threats in all areas. And the real question is, well, what are they saving for a rainy day or for when they need it? Do they have capabilities to... and they're attacking military targets all the time, but apparently with very limited success. I mean, do they have the capability to disrupt IDF operations? For example, can you infect some of the systems that control, the computer systems that control weapon systems? so that you go to fire a missile, for example, only the missile doesn't fire or it mislaunches. In other words, it just goes off target. There are a lot of things that you can do in the military realm. So far, Israel seems to be doing pretty effectively, but it's never enough because you don't know what may be coming.
And so how, yeah, your book, of course, is very new. If this book was written 10 years ago, how might it have been different?
Well, there are a number of important things. I mean, Israel's strategy has developed considerably over the years, and the civil strategy has been put in writing, and it's available for anyone who wants to read it. Obviously not the case for the military doctrine. I would say if we're going to look over the last decade, the biggest single difference is the improvement in Iranian capabilities. Now, here there's the law of unintended consequences. One of the two primary causes that led Iran to really get involved in the cyber realm was the cyber attack against Iran, against its nuclear program in 2010. Was known as the Stuxnet attack. It's been attributed to as a joint operation both of the U.S. and Israel. It's an operation which caused about 1,000 of their nuclear centrifuges to spin out of control and destroy themselves. Considered to this day one of the greatest cyber attacks in history. This was truly intelligence and cyber brilliance, and then there was a glitch that got out, and the Iranians were able to understand what was happening. But that woke them up, that and one other event, but that woke them up to the dangers of the cyber realm, to the fact that they weren't involved. And in the last decade, they have very, very rapidly built up their capabilities. And today, I would say that if Israel is considered to be in the top maybe five cyber powers, in any event, the top tier, the Iranians are in a good place in the second tier of cyber actors and considered one of the most active ones. So that's, I would say, probably the single most important development from Israel's perspective in this decade.
That's very counterintuitive. One might have assumed, erroneously so, that Iran's cyber security capabilities were a lot less advanced than what you're suggesting. Is this something for Israel to worry about, this very rapid increase in Iran's capabilities, or has Stuxnet and others really helped to intimidate Iran into showing what Israel also, for its part, can do?
Well, I have no doubt that they're concerned, worried about Israel's cyber capabilities, because Israel is still way ahead of them in the field. But Iran is a big country, 80-something million people, very smart, well-educated, very internet and computer savvy generally. And part of what they've done in this decade is to build up their educational, their computer, their cyber educational system. They didn't have that much. Of course, we have to be worried. Iran is Israel's primary adversary in the cyber realm, as it is in every other area. And it's interesting. There isn't too much information out there about Hezbollah's capabilities, and they're an absolute Iranian proxy. There's more about Hamas, but Iran has clearly helped both of them build up their cyber capabilities. And again, we have to worry about what they have in store. So far, it hasn't been as bad as we might have feared. But we don't know what they've got under their sleeves.
Tell us a little bit about, we've sort of examined that side then. So tell us a little bit about, how, help us understand, I suppose, how Israel's cyber capabilities are distinct, if at all distinct, from the broader, as I mentioned earlier, tech efforts. In other words, has this been an area or a niche that has developed separately, or is it very much part and parcel of Israel's startup nation mentality and its, necessity is a mother of invention and that's what's driving it, or are there other factors at play here?
No, I think as in general, it is part of that general story that you're talking about, but it is also an area of particular expertise. Israel got into it very early and formulated the strategies and established the institutions very early. Unfortunately, I'm afraid that we're missing the AI revolution from that point of view because of the ongoing political crisis. But we got involved early. And cyber, even more than high tech in general, played to Israel's national capabilities, its particular advantages. You don't need a lot of people for cyber. You need a bunch of very, very smart and creative ones, people who know how to think out of the box. You don't need big investments. That's true of most areas of high tech in general. It's not like the heavy industry in the past. Again, it suits Israel's capabilities because we don't usually have the ability to make a huge investment. And thirdly, it requires something that we have in abundance, and that's a lot of chutzpah. And we have a chapter where we speak about chutzpah gone viral as being part of Israel's national culture and the way people think and do things. It also, I think this is something that draws on Jewish traditions of Torah learning, where you challenge the rabbi. It's not like in some other religions where what the religious leader says is, that's the way it is. Yeshiva students were always challenged. We're always supposed to challenge the rabbi. Talmudic pilpul. So there's that. There's also the fact that for a couple of millennia, we tended to live in societies in which the rulers were viewed as hostile to the Jewish community. And so authority, rules, laws were also something to be challenged and actually to be circumvented and ignored if possible. Now you take that Jewish tradition, then add it to the Israeli experience of the few against the many, of having to find all sorts of creative, out-of-the-box ways to survive, especially in the early decades when things were, Israel's resources were really limited. So refusing to take no for an answer, constantly challenging authority, accepted wisdom, almost the laws of physics, is part of Israeli culture. And you also add that to the training that people get in the IDF to think out of the box. So cyber became an area that we were involved in very early and very good at.
So let's briefly touch on the AI revolution then. You mentioned that. How does that change the cyber warfare paradigm?
I guess it just makes things far more complicated and far more interesting. It's going to be of great benefit for both the offense and the defense in the cyber area, because it will produce all sorts of new capabilities, maybe some of them heretofore unimaginable capabilities. And it is a real shame. I mean, Israel's reasonably well positioned in the AI area. And again, the defense establishment is heavily invested in it, economically and just in terms of attention. But the intention was for Israel to do in the AI area what it had done in the cyber area. In other words, to get in very early. And the official objective was to become, as in the cyber area, one of the top five powers in the world. And maybe we could have done that here too. And if it wasn't five, it was six or seven, that's okay also. We've partly missed it because it requires national leadership. And for the last, about 4 or 5 years, we've been caught up in an endless cycle of elections. And then the last year, or three quarters of a year, the judicial overhaul crisis. And so the national leadership their intention has been diverted for a long time. They're not dealing with this.
Well, it sounds like you're offering somewhat of a cri de coeur that this is definitely the wave of what cybersecurity and cyber warfare is going to look like in the future. And Israel is well positioned, but it needs to seize the opportunity.
Absolutely. Cyber and AI are going to be an integral part of any future conflict of significance, certainly ones that Israel's involved in, because if our enemies don't use it, and they will, we will. As a matter of fact, the conflict in Gaza a little over a year ago was considered the first significant AI conflict. Israel used it a lot for certainly targeting purposes, developing targets in Gaza.
Well, Chuck Farland, thank you so much for your time and for sharing your expertise, and best wishes with the success of your new book, Israel and the Cyber Threat, How the Startup Nation Became a Global Cyber Power. Thank you so much again.
Thank you. And for those interested, it is available both on Amazon and Oxford University Press, where it's available at a discount.
And that's today's edition of the Honest Report podcast. If you haven't done so yet, please subscribe to our mailing list, our podcast channel, and follow us on social media for the most up-to-date news. If you like what you've heard, please consider a donation to support our continued efforts at www.honestreporting.ca/donate. Until next time, thank you so much for listening.